Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a warm welcome to Friday. This is DW's Africa Link coming to you live from Bonn in Germany. My name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm your co-host Wanjiko Mwaura with what's trending on social media. Coming up in the next 15 minutes...
it's football time in Africa. And as the AFCON, African Cup of Nations, kicks off in Gabon on Saturday, we will have some analysis and your feedbacks throughout the show. But before that, West African leaders from the regional body ECOWAS arrive in Gambia to sway President Yahya Jammeh to step down.
I think ECOWAS heads of state coming to the Gambia is a welcome initiative, and we hope that they will be able to convince him to hand over power peacefully.
No, the only thing is for President Jammeh to step down.
Personally, I'm not really hopeful that he will listen to them. We are really suffering the heat. The country is empty. Everybody is fleeing.
François Hollande bids farewell to Africa in his final visit as president of France. But what sort of legacies is he leaving in the African continent?
Non seulement le Mali a été sauvé d'une certaine balkanisation.
He stopped Mali from disintegrating. The CAR was also stabilized somewhat through the French military intervention.
Hope you'll stick around for these stories and more. First, a look at what's happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. African leaders have arrived in Gambia on Friday to convince outgoing President Yahya Jammeh to step down. Nigeria has offered political asylum to the Gambian leader in hopes he would relinquish power after his defeat in last month's presidential elections to Adama Barrow. Jammeh had initially accepted defeat, but later called the elections a fraud, putting the small West African nation in a political deadlock. He has since filed a motion with the Supreme Court to prevent Barrow from being sworn into office on January 19th. Chinese state media has warned the U.S. of possible war if Beijing's access to the South China Sea is blocked. This comes after U.S. President Donald Trump's Secretary of State nominee Rex Tillerson told U.S. senators he would seek to deny China access to the islands, where trillions of shipborne trade passes every year. China's foreign ministry spokesman has advised Washington not to get involved.
Like the U.S., China also completely has the right to conduct any normal activities in its sovereign territory, and that is indisputable. We hope the countries outside the region can respect this consensus that is in line with the common interests of regional countries and the world.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Storm Egon's hurricane-force winds and heavy snow has canceled hundreds of flights and left thousands without power across Europe and England. The storm first hit England, where its Environment Agency issued severe flood warnings for coastal areas and said gale-force winds and heavy rain could threaten life. In Germany, hundreds of flights were canceled as heavy snow covered parts of the country. At least one person has died. In France, Egon caused power outages for over 300,000 households. And in Switzerland, snow canceled travel commutes and caused traffic accidents. Meanwhile, the United Nations has warned against a dire situation in Europe, noting that migrants are dying of cold. The UN has said governments must do more to help them.
We are extremely concerned by reports that several refugees and migrants have lost their lives trying to enter or move across Europe, including 5 deaths since the beginning of the year due to the freezing weather.
French and African foreign ministers have opened a summit in Mali, where ministers from nearly 40 countries have discussed economic ties and security issues. Some 10,000 security personnel have been stationed in capital Bamako ahead of the 27th Africa-France summit on Saturday, when French President François Hollande is to bid farewell to more than 30 African heads of state before he steps down later in the year. And now in sports, the 31st African Cup of Nations is set to kick off in Gabon on Saturday. 16 teams are to compete in over 32 matches in just 23 days, when finally the tournament ends on February 15th. Host Gabon is to take on Guinea-Bissau. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
Now, leaders of Nigeria, Sierra Leone and Liberia have arrived in the Gambia in a bid to try and convince President Yahya Jammeh to step down. This will make way for the inauguration of President-elect Adama Barrow next week. Nigeria's Muhammadu Buhari, Liberia's Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and Sierra Leone's Ernest Bai Koroma are also expected to meet Barrow in the capital, Banjul. Now, a DW contributor in Banjul, Omar Wali, has been out and about speaking to ordinary Gambians about their views on the arrival of the ECOWAS delegation.
I think ECOWAS heads of state coming to the Gambia is a welcome initiative, and we hope that this is going to be the last time that they are coming to the country. We hope that they will be able to convince him to hand over power peacefully, because we wouldn't want to go through what we have been seeing on television or hearing on radio stations in other countries. I have the belief that if he doesn't hand over power until the 19th, the country will turn into something else, and we don't want to see that. The Gambia has been that country that's been harboring people from the sub-region, and we would want to see that continue. So the Gambian being so peaceful, and Yahya Jammeh himself being somebody who advocates for peace, I want to believe that, you know, when people come to you knowing that you lost the election, when people come to you to plead to you to hand over power peacefully, it should be an honor for you to do it.
No, the only thing is for President Jammeh to step down in the interest of peace, democracy and the rule of law.
Well, this is a very good opportunity for the outgoing president, President Yahya Jammeh, to listen to the brothers who are coming from the ECOWAS states to negotiate, you know, for him to give or hand over power to the president-elect, Adama Barrow, who the Gambian, you know, people decided to lead this country for the next 5 years. I think this is a very, very important step for him, and it's going to be a, you know, very good way for him to accept. The only way for this is to just hand over power to the Gambian new elected president, then life continue, and you know, you can be remembered as a citizen of this country in the future.
Personally, I'm not really hopeful that he will listen to them. We are really suffering the heat. The country is empty. Everybody is fleeing. You cannot even have the peace of mind to sit, rest, and do whatever you feel like doing. So I just hope he will listen to them and agree to step down so that we can go ahead with the inauguration on the 19th.
Some Gambians there talking to our contributor in Banjul, Omar Wali, about their views on the arrival of ECOWAS delegation.
And we are monitoring your views on AFCON that is set to start tomorrow. Oluwa Zagun says, as for me, I will be following the EPL first, followed by the Nigeria Professional Football League, then AFCON, since Nigeria is not involved again.
Okay, more to come on that topic. Now, the confirmation hearings of US President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet nominees continue to reveal a real policy divide between Mr. Trump himself and his nominees. The latest is his pick for the top CIA top job, Mike Pompeo, who accepts the findings in an intelligence assessment that Russia interfered in the US election. Trump had denied the allegations through his usual Twitter storm. Zipporah Nyambura has more.
All attention is now on the U.S. cabinet confirmation hearings, which have to be done before Trump's inauguration on the 20th of this month. However, some of his nominees have disagreed with him at the hearings, defending intelligence reports, especially on Russia's hacking of the Democrats during the election. The CIA nominee Mike Pompeo testified during the hearing that the hacking and the campaign was authorized at the highest level of Russian authorities.
It's pretty clear about what took place here, about Russian involvement in efforts to hack information and to have an impact on American democracy.
Pompeo was backed by retired General James Mattis, the defense secretary nominee, who says he considers Russia a great threat to America's democracy. Trump went on to Twitter today and openly refuted the intelligence team report, terming it as fake news. He says it's all made up by his opponents in both the Democratic and the Republican parties. Other issues that some of Trump's nominees have differed with him are banning Muslims from entering the U.S. and building a wall along the border with Mexico. The nominee for the Department of Homeland Security, John F. Kelly, a retired Marine Corps general, told the Senate committee members that building a wall would not stop illegal immigration. While Jeff Sessions, the incoming Attorney General, said he does not support banning people from entering the U.S. on religious grounds. But some observers, like Nicole Renvard from the German Council on Foreign Relationships, think that for nominees to differ in policy with Donald Trump could be a tactic to please the panel.
Well, at the end of the day, they have to follow the Trump agenda because they will be in Trump's team. But there has to be a preparation when they go to the hearings. So it is a mixture between a good strategy, well-prepared, and of course some of the answer is something where they know this is what Congress wants to hear.
Trump's team is confident all the nominees will go through before his inauguration as the 45th President of the United States of America Friday next week.
Zipporah Nyambura reporting. Sam Sokol says, given that the nominees have been a little tougher on Russia than Donald Trump, maybe he will take a cue from his nominees. We also have another comment coming in from Simon Hedlin, who says, I really hope that Donald Trump will listen to his cabinet ministers when they disagree with him. That would be good for the country.
And now on to a different story. This weekend, French President Francois Hollande will attend the 27th Africa-France Summit in Bamako, Mali. The summit will be an opportunity for him to bid farewell to his African counterparts, since he will be stepping down later in the year as leader of France. Under Hollande's leadership, France witnessed some of its most controversial policies since the colonial era in Africa. Isaac Mugabe has the story.
This Africa-France summit will be an opportunity for French President François Hollande to bid farewell to his African counterparts. The French leader will step down later in the year and will not be seeking a second term. This summit sees Hollande's return to a country that had a decisive impact on French foreign policy during his term of office. In January 2013, France launched a military operation against jihadists in Mali. In December of the same year, France also embarked on a military campaign in Central African Republic, CAR, which was teetering on the brink of civil war in the wake of a coup. Gabon-based political scientist Ndoutoume Ngom told DW he views Hollande's policy towards Africa in a positive light.
Non seulement le Mali a été sauvé d'une certaine balkanisation.
He stopped Mali from disintegrating. The CAR was also stabilized somewhat through the French military intervention. The Seleka and Anti-Balaka and other political and military forces were in control of the CAR.
Analyst Roland Machal from France's National Center for Scientific Research, CNRS, is rather more critical.
French foreign policy under Hollande placed so much emphasis on military intervention. Nobody questions whether these military operations are justified. In the case of Mali, we see that it hasn't worked.
When François Hollande took office in 2012, he announced that he would break away from the practice of Françafrique. Françafrique refers to that cozy and sometimes uncritical relationship France has with its former colonies. But this hasn't happened. Hollande took a big risk when he insisted that the 27th Africa-France summit should be held in Bamako. For him, holding the summit there served as a backdrop for shoring up his legacy in Africa.
Isaac Mugabe there on the French President François Hollande's final visit to Africa.
And we are now looking at your comments on the stories that we've run in this section.
And give us some of those comments, Wanjiku.
Yes, of course. Lawali Osman Lano says, Yaya Jammeh has to think twice about the asylum offered to him by Nigeria because it was offered to Charles Taylor of Liberia in 2003. And at the end, he was handed over to the ICC. In my opinion, that is Lawali's opinion, Yaya Jammeh should continue ruling the country because of Barrow's intention to pursue him.
I think he knows that, hey? Jammeh knows that what happened to Charles Taylor. Probably he's a bit scared that the same thing might happen to him.
It seems so. Yeah. Adele Fatouye Terence says, Mr. Jammeh has been thrown a lifeline. He had better grab it or he will live to regret his actions after January 19th.
Yes, we've been following the developments in the Gambia for you. And the latest is that the Nigerian government voted for that asylum there. It's been approved by the Nigerian parliament that they will grant Jammeh asylum in Nigeria.
Indeed, and people are still commenting on this story. Kenneth Ofori responds to One NCC and says that it is not true that Nigeria will actually take him to the ICC.
Well, that's pretty much his opinion, right?
Yes, indeed. Another comment coming in from John Peter says, Yaya Jammeh is being offered asylum by Nigeria is a great deal. He should just leave office because Nigeria won't take it well with him if he rejects.
Well, sadly, we have to leave it there. Thanks, everyone, for your contribution. Keep the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa. You are listening to DW's Africa from Bonn in Germany with me, Abubakar Jalo.
And Wanjiko Mwaura.
In the next 15 minutes, the 2017 African Cup of Nations kicks off tomorrow in Gabon. Who is the favorite to win?
The indomitable Lions of Cameroon, in my opinion, stand as favourites to qualify from Group A. Cameroon are one of the most successful teams in the history of the Africa Cup of Nations.
And we'll be having more of your heated comments on AFCON, which starts tomorrow.
Exactly. But first, the United Nations and the government of the Central African Republic have launched a 3-year humanitarian response plan for the country today. With an annual budget of nearly $400 million, the plan is intended to meet the needs of 2.2 million Central Africans after 3 years of institutional and humanitarian crisis in the country. DW Zach Badoff has the story from the capital, Bangui.
About 100 members of the Diplomatic Corps, UN mission, nonprofit organizations, and press came together today to learn how the government and the UN plan to support the 2.2 million Central Africans, nearly half of the country, who are in need of emergency food aid, among other challenges currently affecting the country. At the ceremony, the UN's top official in CAR, Parfait Onanga Anyanga, painted a bleak picture of the situation and outlined plans to avert the situation.
Dans la crise, il y a la faim.
In the crisis, there is hunger. In the crisis, there is malnutrition. There is illness. Often, there is also death.
Souvent, la mort.
While extreme violence has tremendously decreased in the capital, Bangui, and its suburbs, clashes still happen in the countryside, especially between armed groups. Violations of human rights and war crimes, killings, torture, rape, forced displacement, are also rampant. Humanitarian workers and UN peacekeeping troops have not been spared either, as the UN's Parfait Anyanga further explains.
However, I have to acknowledge that because of the complexity of the situation in the country, it is deplorable to know that still, only last year, 330 attacks were targeting, you know, humanitarian workers. So this is extremely deplorable.
There was also a moment of silence to remember humanitarian workers who lost their lives. Joseph Muyongo is from Rwanda and working with the Catholic Relief Services. He told me that although his work takes him to high-risk areas of the country, he's still proud of the impact it has on the local communities.
They are happy for what we give them, but the needs are beyond what we give. And this, they say, why we have international organizations, international community, and the crisis continues.
The UN acknowledges that poverty, bad governance, and the plundering of natural resources are underlying issues that need to be addressed. Yvonne Kongo Adama also works at Catholic Relief Services. He's from the southeast of the country and says there's still a lot of work to be done.
It's true that with the events, we have plenty of humanitarian actors who are at work, but realize that all that they're trying to do doesn't satisfy the real humanitarian needs of the community of the Central African people. This is because before all that, there is the issue of security.
It should be recalled that a conference in Brussels raised $2.2 billion for development and humanitarian aid in the country, but it's unclear how much of that will end up being available for humanitarian work.
DW Zach Badoff reporting.
Blog report.
Now imagine being born and raised as a refugee, living in a camp that is bigger than most of the cities within a whole country. Imagine living with hundreds of thousands of people around who have fled from war or drought. And also imagine not even being able to define what home really means to you. Dadaab camp is considered the biggest refugee camp in the world, but Kenya wants to close the camp and repatriate the refugees back to their homeland, Somalia. A blogger named Brownkey Abdullah was born there, and she says she won't go back home to Somalia. Our correspondent Rahel Klein met this blogger and filed this report.
Brownkey Abdullahi's parents fled Somalia in 1991 after the fall of President Siad Barre, which led the country into a civil war. They sought refuge in Kenya's Dadaab camp, the world's biggest camp with more than 300,000 inhabitants. Brownkey was born there.
My nationality, my dear, is a refugee, and the name I give myself is a Dadaabian because I don't belong to any nationality. I'm not Somali by nationality, neither by Kenya. I'm refugee by nationality. That's why I call myself a Dadaabian. Dadaab is where I'm born and I'm raised up. And it's the only home I know right now.
The 24-year-old Brownkey Abdullahi went to school in Dadaab. At the age of 3, she was the youngest schoolgirl among all students. Now, she's the first female blogger within the camp, and she advocates against female genital mutilation, even if some people don't like her criticism of traditional values.
I'm doing something for my community. I'm the voice of the young girls who are voiceless in our community. I don't care what people tell about me or any action they take to stop my dream, but according to me, I'm not going to stop this.
But that's not the only challenge Brownkey faces. In 2016, the Kenyan government announced the closure of Dadaab after several terrorist attacks in Kenya. The government views the refugee camp as a breeding ground for terrorists. President Uhuru Kenyatta has vowed to shut down the camp by the end of May 2017. Nearly 300,000 Somali refugees would have to return to their home country, a place that still faces major security threats to the Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab.
People they are tossing and turning with the stories of the camp, and they are really so worried about the future they are going to have it.
According to a recent survey by the United Nations, 75% of the Somali refugees don't want to return to their home country. A repatriation agreement says they cannot be forced to leave the camp. But the Kenyan government is trying to persuade as many as possible, and the UN is also giving out a cash grant of about $400 to anyone who wishes to leave Dadaab voluntarily.
Me, I'm not planning to volunteer myself and to go back to Somalia unless I'm forced and told to go out from the camp.
Of course, living in a refugee camp for 25 years is not a sustainable solution. Brownkey herself feels like a prisoner in an open prison. But at least Dadaab is a more or less safe place in contrast to Somalia.
Rahel Klein there with that report. Well, from a very sad story to an exciting one. Yes, yes. It's time to take off your work t-shirt and put on that jersey of your favorite football team. The tournament we've all been waiting for is finally here. AFCON, or the African Cup of Nations 2017, kicks off in Gabon tomorrow with host nation Gabon locking horns with Guinea-Bissau. So who is the favorite to win the tournament? A question I put to Zambian sports analyst Lawrence Lihusha.
The setting for this tournament kicking off this Saturday in Gabon. Now let me run you through Group A, Group B, C and D. All right, now from each group, I'll basically pick two that I think might make it through to the quarterfinals of the tournament. Group A, there's the host Gabon, then there's Cameroon, Guinea-Bissau, and Burkina Faso. Let me start with the team that I strongly feel might just pull it off from Group A. The Indomitable Lions of Cameroon, in my opinion, stand as favorites to qualify from Group A. Cameroon are one of the most successful teams in the history of the Africa Cup of Nations tournament. You'll agree with me, having won the continental showpiece on four previous occasions.
Lawrence, why do you come up with that conviction that the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon will be one of the successful teams in this AFCON tournament?
You have to consider the route through which the team qualified. Qualifying top of Group M itself is quite impressive. You realize that the Indomitable Lions have also been quite impressive over the last few years. Their brand of football is exciting.
Yes.
You know, they have crisis. Like I said, they have a crisis because eight top players opted not to play for them at this tournament, opting to concentrate on their club football, bringing to life the club business country route that always dominate African football.
That's definitely going to affect the Indomitable Lions because of those eight players, as you mentioned there, that refused to play for Cameroon. Now, let's talk a little bit more about the host nation, Gabon. What are their chances there?
All right. Now, Gabon, they qualify by virtue of being host, quite right. Having hosted the continental tournament alongside Equatorial Guinea in 2012, Gabon are expected to organize the showpiece for the second time. You know, in 5 years, they are coached by a former Real Madrid and Spain defender in Jose Antonio Camacho. That in itself is a factor, if you may ask me, because they have a tactician, you know, with a reach, with a wealth of experience, you know, at the highest level in Jose Antonio Camacho. The guy got the World Cup.
Gabon does have players like Aubameyang. What kind of impact do foreign players like these have on their national team since they really do not train on a daily basis with the local stars?
Well, you may call them a one-man team, considering that you probably would have picked three other players with a class of Aubameyang in that Gabonese side. That certainly is true, but their talismanic forward in Aubameyang might just carry the team to and spur them further. And don't forget, there's the 12th factor, the 12th man on the pitch, the support that will be getting behind the Gabonese side.
We have the previous favorite teams used to be Nigeria, Zambia, Guinea-Conakry, Bafana, or South Africa. They're all not there this time around. Does it feel really weird?
The absence of Nigeria is regrettable, definitely. It may give an advantage to teams that haven't been winning for some time now. I talked of Cameroon, or the Senegal, all right, and there's Egypt, who are coming back, having missed out a couple of editions back, if not three. Now, their absence certainly gives chance to other teams to win it, without doubt.
Zambian sports analyst Lawrence Lihusha, and apologies there for the poor quality of the telephone line.
Well, AFCON is only a few hours away and so many people are talking about it, Abu.
Interestingly, do we have any predictions from an African octopus?
Well, I think we would have to wait a little more for that, maybe the next World Cup. But we do have people placing bets on the countries that may take home the AFCON Cup. For example, Joe Aido commenting from Askarangwa in Ghana says, Ghana is definitely going to be crowned winners of this year's AFCON. We also have Bossman Isaac who says, Ghana will definitely win the trophy.
Well, I wish that. I bet people are actually looking for their individual countries as I am.
Yes, we do have someone who seems a bit angry about their national team, and that is one Samuel Nkanga, who says, South African style of football is simply outdated and slowly deteriorates. These boys embarrass us and make us look bad to other African countries. I have decided to embark on a trip to Gabon today. I need to see the opening matches live. Maybe my presence will change things around for Bafana.
Now, that's what I call critical supporter.
Well, that's one way to call it. Which country do you think will take the trophy this
Ghana,
year?
Ghana, of course.
Oh, come on. I think it's the year for the underdog.
Uh-huh.
Maybe Zimbabwe.
Well, it's your opinion. Whatever.
Well, we have some more comments coming in.
Yep, let's read them out.
Onko Gopotse Lepule says, our national team is not present at AFCON 2017, so I am compelled to support Zimbabwe. 90% of their squad plays in our league. That's the South African League. We also have another comment from Senzo Kamamba who says, all the best to Zimbabwean national football team as they prepare for AFCON. I think they have quality players this time, and I don't think they will disappoint. I see there are so many people with opinions similar to mine, eh?
Exactly. Well, we'll be bringing you all the highlights of the tournament on Africa Link.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. We also have one football fan who is frustrated by the course of events in his country. Robert Onekan says, the gods must surely be against Uganda Cranes. UBC has for years telecast AFCON games free of charge, but this year they ran out of money. Now they will not broadcast the games that start on Saturday. What a coincidence.
Indeed, yeah. Well, keep the comments coming on our page there, DW Africa on Facebook. And that's all we had time for. For more stories, you can visit our website, dw.com/Africa.
And you can still keep the conversation going on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
My colleague Mark Caldwell will be here with you next week. Please join him if you can. And from me, Abu Bakar Jalo.
And Wanjiko Mwaura.
Have an awesome, awesome weekend.
And enjoy football. Ensemble on fait le show.